Coming up on this episode of Nintendo Cartridge Society, if they're all Zelda games, can any of them really be deep cuts? It's dangerous to go alone, so the Nintendo Cartridge Society goes with you. Welcome to Nintendo Cartridge Society. My name is Patrick Ellers, and I am joined, as I am always joined, by my co-host, Mark Mitchell. Mark, how's it going?
It's going great. Patrick, I have a question for you.
Yeah, let's hear it.
So we are in the season of giving.
Mm-hmm.
Growing up, how did your parents handle like holiday and birthday gifts? Were there parameters? Did they have rules where it was like, you can ask for things up to a certain amount, and they, you know, like, and we do a
we never
certain
discuss,
number of
discuss
gifts.
anything as gauche as money.
There is no rubric.
No, there really was no rubric. I think you just sort of had like an internal like sense.
Uh-huh.
But like
from years of receiving gifts, you're like, yeah. This is not. Was there any time that you were like, I'm gonna push my luck, and it worked out, like a Ferrari?
I never got a Ferrari. To answer that question, no, I do like. Oh God, you know, now that I'm, and they all, it always meant, every Christmas meant so much to me. So it's like embarrassing in retrospect now that I'm having kind of a hard time remembering what I got for Christmas.
No, it's true. I can tell one of the, I'm pretty sure it was Christmas.
Yeah.
One of the happiest years was the year I received a fog machine. I wanted a fog machine.
Why?
So bad. So, like, me and my siblings would put on, like,
Little shows. Yeah.
And any little show is enhanced by a big fog machine.
How big of a fog machine are we talking about here?
I mean, it was, I would say,
standard fog
issue.
Juice?
Yeah, gallons. No, it was, I would say it was standard issue.
Yeah.
You know, for, like, a small Halloween party type fog machine.
See, I would say that by the time I was, like, old enough to strategize about, like, you know, what I could ask for Christmas, that I was like too old to be doing that. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like there's something, and I know like all kids like go through this phase of like being crass about presents where they're just like, yeah, but why don't you buy me this? Cause you know, you don't have money. But I feel like by the time I developed that instinct, I did have money, right? Like I had allowance and could just like buy my own things.
Uh-huh.
And like, I don't know. I've told this story a couple times that when you know, some Christmas, all I wanted was Final Fantasy II for the Super NES, Final Fantasy IV, of course. And I asked for it, and my grandmother bought me Final Fantasy III, and I was so disappointed because I was like, this isn't the Final Fantasy game that I wanted. But then I played it, and of course, it's one of the greatest games of all time, and I loved it. So, like, I don't know if that just, like, broke something in me where I'm like, whatever you get, like, it has the potential to be the best thing ever. So, like, stop trying to control it. You can't control Christmas.
Yeah, I mean, I love that. I think it's so true. And also, just, like, makes a great, at the end of, like, a family holiday movie.
Yes.
Like, the break the breakthrough moment. For the main character.
Yeah. Right? Now, your birthday's a little bit closer to Christmas.
It is, yeah.
So did you ever get, like, screwed over at
no,
all?
No, I would say my family did a really good job of separating the two.
That's good.
Where, like, the holidays didn't really kick in, which now as an adult is so crazy to me. As a kid, my birthday's in early December, and as a kid, the gulf between early December and Christmas seemed like ages.
Right.
But now I'm like, oh my gosh, like my parents would wait to put up like holiday decorations
until after your birthday.
And so we're talking, you know, like we're in just a handful of days territory at that point. That's a lot of work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to do it.
Pretty impressive.
My birthday's a full 4 months before Christmas.
Nobody's even thinking about it at
this
point.
No one's even thinking about it at that point. And I have like the latest birthday in my immediate family. So like we get all of our birthdays out of the way.
So you guys are raring for Christmas, then. You're
Christmas,
ready for the
Christmas
holidays.
Goes hard. Christmas goes so hard that my mother's mid-January birthday frequently gets almost skipped.
Everybody sells holiday hangover.
That's right. And, like, usually there's, like, a phone call that goes around between the siblings being like, hey, look, I know you know when mom's birthday is, but just a reminder that that day is today. And look, we never all forget it. Someone remembers always. If you would like to support us in our rememberings of birthdays and Christmases, you can go to our Patreon, patreon.com/NintendoCartridgeSociety, where you can check out all of the once a month episodes that we are putting out in various miniseries. We are about to embark on our NCS Arcade, wherein we are going to be playing games that are on the Nintendo Switch Online and NSO Plus Expansion Pass. And talking about them. Mark, what's the first game we're going to be playing?
Yeah, in January, we're going to be playing The Legend of Zelda Minish Cap.
Yes.
A game that neither you or I have ever beaten.
That's right. And even though we are going to talk about it a fair amount today.
Yes, that's right.
But yes, so if you would like to play along with us, if you are a member of the Patreon, you should do so. And we'll be talking about that in early January. And then if you are not supporting us on the Patreon, you should get into our Discord, email us at NintendoCartridgeSociety@gmail.com. And we will send you an invitation. We can have a good time chatting about Nintendo stuff, and probably talking about the Minish Cap with other people in the Discord who are plugged into Nintendo stuff all the time. Little programming note, very quickly, we will not be having an episode on Thursday. Next week is also going to be a one episode week, and then we are taking the week between Christmas and New Year's off because, hey, we're doing that. So there'll be no episode at that point. Mark, that's housekeeping out of the way. Are you ready to try to put all the Zelda games into some categories here?
I'm excited. Let's do it.
The premise here is a couple things, I would say, right? The first being that Apple Music used to do this thing where they would highlight essentials, like essential songs from artists, and then sort of like break them down into the language has shifted over time, which is we got a little confused by it. But they would present you with greatest hits, with next steps, and with deep cuts. And we thought about applying that sort of logic, those categories, to games in long-running series.
Yeah, and one of the reasons that this has been on our minds recently is, you know, Patrick and I have been playing Nintendo games since the Nintendo Entertainment System, you know, in the 80s. And so we have a long history with Nintendo and have played many, not all, Minish Cap, looking at you, of the games in, yeah, you know, like in the Legend of Zelda series. But there are a lot of people who have not, that who have, yes, come to Nintendo with the Switch or come back to the Nintendo with the Switch, and not all of these games are easily playable. And so what we wanted to do was kind of...
I think when you say they're not all easily playable, I think that has multiple meanings, right? Like, they're not all accessible on modern hardware, but kind of beyond that, some of them don't, even like a good game may not hold up or be like functional now just because of the way video games were made 30 years ago.
Yeah, so kind of what we wanted to do was also is, I think, an exercise for ourselves. Like, one of the things that obviously has drawn us to Nintendo and keeps it in our lives is our nostalgia for playing these, mm-hmm, games. And to your point about maybe some of them not aging well, what we wanted to do was kind of try to be as objective as possible.
Well, understanding that an objective assessment of anything is impossible.
Especially art.
Especially art, yes.
It's completely impossible. But we wanted to try to be as, like, true to the facts of the games as possible.
Yes.
To,
yes,
say, look, a lot of people, maybe their first Zelda game that they've ever played or ever beaten happened in the Switch generation, and there's a huge library of Zelda games in the past. And so where would we recommend that people go next? You know, if you, yes, if you liked Breath of the Wild, if you liked Tears of the Kingdom, where are those, you know, next steps?
Right. So, and the sort of like tag onto that is that I think you and I are both kind of in agreement that the versions of a lot of these Nintendo series that have appeared on Switch just sort of are the best iterations of them, right? Like, it's hard to argue that Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom aren't the pinnacle of the Zelda series, just like it's hard to argue that, like, Mario Odyssey and Super Mario Brothers Wonder aren't the pinnacle of the Mario series. The Switch has just been, like, killing it in that regard. And because those are the two most recent examples, the two most recent releases for each of those franchises, we are counting them as the sort of de facto essential games.
Oh, we're counting them as the de facto greatest hits.
Those are the greatest hits. Sorry, my fault. We're still wrapping our heads around the vocabulary here.
Yeah, so those are, and not just are they maybe, you know, like arguably the best examples of those games. With Zelda, it's a little hard because they're so different from the previous games.
Yeah, I agree.
But there's no question for the Zelda series that Breath of the Wild and probably Tears of the Kingdom, these are the best-selling Zelda games. And so they are the ones that people are most likely to have played.
Yeah. Well, I also feel like they are those like most easily that you could like put in front of someone now who is playing other games now and say, this is what Zelda is. And they go, wow, Zelda's worth playing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
That like even the greatest hits that we're going to pull from this are still going to have, and I know there are some people that the Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom have their detractors, but like they are sort of just recognized as like solid games.
Yeah, universally acclaimed.
Universal acclaim. I will accept that as a summation of my rambling.
And so I think, so again, the categories we're going to break these out into,
yes,
are greatest hits,
mm-hmm,
essentials, next steps, and deep cuts. And each one going down becomes like narrower and narrower. And so we're not saying, this is not like a ranking of quality. You know, a lot of times we do rankings in some ways where we're saying like, this is definitively the best.
Yes.
And this is definitively the worst. And that's not really how I think about this. It's more just like, you know, easing into the hot tub of The Legend of Zelda.
Yeah.
You know, like this is kind of the order in which we will determine, we think it makes sense for people to approach these. And not that what the things that end up in deep cuts are bad, just that they are maybe the most esoteric, the most difficult to get into.
Yeah, same with music, right? Like when you are recommending a new band to someone, or someone's like, oh, hey, I really like that song, like one song from this band, where would you recommend I go next? You have like one easy place where you're like, oh yeah, obviously check out Abbey Road next, check out Revolver next, right? But then like you'll get to a point where you're like, okay, when do I start? Like, how interested do they have to be before I'm like, have you listened to Magical Mystery Tour, right?
Right,
like,
right.
So I think like that's sort of the approach that we're having here of like, how much are you asking another person to buy in when you are making the recommendations that get into next steps and into deep cuts?
Yep.
So for the purposes of this, the greatest hits are just going to be the most recent examples as they appear on Switch.
That's right. So we're taking Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom off the board. And so greatest hits almost becomes like a gimme category.
Mm-hmm.
The premise of the episode is that, again, or the premise of this exercise, I guess I should say, just to restate it, is that these games, because they appeared on Switch, are the ones that people are probably the most familiar with. If they've ever played a Legend of Zelda game, it's probably one of these two.
And just by sales numbers, that is like statistically likely.
Yeah.
these two games, these are the songs that your friend heard on the radio, and they're like, hey, I like that Legend of Zelda series. What should I listen to next? And so what we are going to do now is, do you want to go like by category, or do you want to kind of go by game and try to sort them that way?
That I was thinking it probably makes sense to talk about, and I don't think we have to go in chronological order.
Sure.
I think we can start wherever our gut collectively is telling us, but I think it makes sense to talk about games and kind of put them in categories based on that. And you know, we don't really have a limit on the amount of games that can be essentials or next steps or deep cuts.
Right.
So I think we'll kind of just feel our way through all of that.
I will agree. As we develop the tools that we develop here, we are going to be applying all of those to our discussion of the Mario series next week. Look, These are new tools for us, and I'm excited for us to sharpen them. But let's dig in.
Yeah.
Let's get sharpening. Oh, so we are just doing like mainline games here, right? We're not doing any spin-offs. So sorry, Tingle Games. Sorry, Triforce Heroes. Sorry, Link's Crossbow Training. You're all getting the boot.
And I think part of that is like, by virtue of being a spin-off, it would like, it would be deep cuts at best.
I mean, there's another category in Apple Music that's like influences or like influenced by. And I feel like Link's Crossbow Training is more of an influenced by the Zelda series than it is a genuine game in the series.
So if you want, you can have that category. You can have influenced by in your mind. And that's where all the spin-offs
And then we
got to
put 3D.Game Heroes and Tunic and Death's Door and like a million other games.
Yes.
But we are not doing that, even though I just perfectly named three really good examples. All right. So, Mark, where would you like to start? I do kind of think that there are like roads, like backwards through obscurity, if that makes sense, that like we could take a game that I think we could argue as an essential game, like Link to the Past, and sort of draw a line into next steps and deep cuts from there.
Oh, okay.
Although, let me know if you think A Link to the Past is in fact an essential game, or if it's showing its age. You and I, on multiple different podcasts, multiple different episodes of multiple different podcasts, have called A Link to the Past the perfect video game.
Yeah, I honestly think the reason that A Link to the Past, especially, I'm fine. We can always argue ourselves out of it. I'm fine putting A Link to the Past in essentials for now, and like you said, kind of using that as the first path that we walk down to explore other games. And for me, the reason that I think A Link to the Past, it has kind of like, its time has come back around a little bit, and I think it's because of so many indie games that were inspired by it.
Absolutely.
That games like A Link to the Past no longer feel archaic.
That is very interesting.
Because, you know, like, you will be hard pressed to find a new video game from like a major developer that looks and feels like A Link to the Past, but you will find a ton of indie games. Like, that is a type of indie game is
a Link to the Past like.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I think because of that, it has made all indie games in general have made these retro style games not feel archaic anymore. They just feel like not AAA, you know, like big budget titles in a way that was, there were generations where there was not that, where that wasn't true. After the Nintendo, Super Nintendo, no game wanted to look like a Super Nintendo game.
Yeah.
It was only, I would say really with the Xbox 360 generation that sort of thing started becoming in vogue in console gaming again. And so,
and that hasn't really happened to the other styles of game here, right? Like, I guess you could sort of argue that the look of Wind Waker is something that has been emulated a bunch of other times, but like that style of game is not really anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's true for Ocarina of Time.
Yeah,
you know,
and
like Majora's Mask and stuff, where there's something that's timeless and classic about pixel art in a way that early 3D models just, they don't capture that. So yeah, all of this is to say, I agree with your designation that A Link to the Past makes sense to me as an essential game in the Legend of Zelda series.
Okay, so putting A Link to the Past, at least tentatively, in the essential category, which then, like, I feel like the lineage of A Link to the Past, as it sort of like its tendrils extend backwards in, forwards in time, really? Like, the descendants of A Link to the Past are, I'm just going to list some games here, and then we can talk about like where we put them. Link's Awakening, the Oracle games, and A Link Between Worlds.
Yeah, that's interesting. I would also, I don't disagree with that. I would also put Minish Cap in there,
I
think.
Yeah, that's
interesting. Just because it's that third of the Capcom-developed games in the lineage of Oracle of Seasons and Oracle of Ages.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that makes sense that it's in like the same lineage, although that almost makes me wonder if Oracle, Minish Cap is its own lineage.
Yeah, in a way, for sure. I mean, I do think the trunk of this tree is a link to the past.
Yeah.
And that they're definitely both Link's Awakening, the Oracle Games, and Minish Cap all follow that. A Link Between Worlds is on that family tree, but like a different branch, for sure.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. It's so weird, though, because like the branching path sort of goes like, backwards to Link's Awakening, and then backwards again to Oracle, and then like sort of forwards again to Minish Cap.
In like, I don't know, mean, like mechanic wise.
I just in terms of like presentation and like the way these games influence each other and like start their own things is all very interesting to me. And I know we're kind of just talking about like 2D games here, the non DS 2D games that came after A Link to the Past, but like they are all a family.
Yeah, definitely. But I think, do you think that part of that is because A Link to the Past was the language of,
yes,
it was like the final word on 2D Zelda for a really long time,
right?
And so it was the template for,
it's also like the first real word on it after the,
isn't
the
it?
NES
so
games.
It boggles the mind,
yes,
that A Link to the Past is the third game.
Unreal.
In the Legend of Zelda
Unreal.
Series.
Yes.
And that is the template that the Legend of Zelda would continue to follow for what? Like 15 years?
Yeah. Yeah.
Until 2017?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's wild. Okay.
So I think let's maybe actually just go through this chronologically. So we have A Link to the Past.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the next one it makes sense for us to kind of like think about is Link's Awakening.
Yeah.
And I like having these two things to compare to each other as far as like games go, and it's honestly kind of a relief to not have to do this as far as like quality, because I think Link's Awakening is a, well, here's something that we have to consider,
yeah, lay it on me,
is that Link's Awakening has a
remake, right,
on the
that
Switch.
Appears on Switch, yeah.
And so
a remake that I love too.
And so does that sort of like modernization of it,
I think, is it's not that modernized. Like, it looks modern, but it plays very much like its old self.
It for sure.
My gut is to put this into the next steps category. I don't think it is as obscure as a deep cut. Even though like it is one of the like weirder kind of stories of the game, it is, you know, it will teach you less about Zelda lore, but it will teach someone more about like the strange Zelda vibes, right? And we're not approaching all of this from like an educational standpoint, but like in some ways there is, right, of like how do you understand your relationship to the Zelda series, and Link's Awakening is a beautiful sample platter of what weirdos there can be in these games.
I think that's true.
There's a goat who writes letters.
And what I mean, yes, case closed. One of the things that we admire about the series so much is strange NPCs that have their own inner life. And I think Link's Awakening took that into a bold, strong direction. I am okay putting Link's Awakening in next steps.
Where is your impulse?
I think an argument could be made for deep cuts.
Okay.
Just because of how
old it is.
Old it is, and I guess the fact that the Switch version exists is maybe the reason that would keep it out of deep cuts and into next steps, because, and I don't just mean like literally accessible, because you know the Switch is really popular and it's easy to get a copy of this,
and it's available on Nintendo Switch Online,
but I also think that having if I were to introduce somebody to Link's Awakening, it would be the Switch version, because it looks cute.
Yeah.
It sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yes, like it is basically a tile for tile remake, but you don't have to dive into the menu all the time to switch items anymore. You know,
true.
If you want to equip the rock feather, you know, it's just like there all of those niceties.
You've got a permanent sword button.
Yeah, like all of the
crazy to think that the original doesn't have
all of those niceties, I think, make it easier to get into. For me, the thing about Link's Awakening is that I really don't think the dungeons are very good. And I think by the end, they are they really bog down the game.
Right. So I think that is true, but there is a step of obscurity beyond that, which I think the Oracle games represent.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, if Link's Awakening is a deep cut, then are the Oracle games just, like, counter recommendations? I just want to make sure that we're putting everything into, and there are going to be, I'm pretty sure, times when we land on something where, like, comparison points between two games don't totally make sense.
And I think, I think that's true. And but I think you're right that if Link's Awakening was a deep cut, like Oracle of Ages, for me, Oracle of Seasons and Ages would be like really deep cuts.
Yeah.
Hard to recommend, you know, cuts.
Yeah.
And so I think it does make sense to let's keep Link's Awakening in next steps for now. I think once we have other things in these buckets, it might be easier
to sort, filter
a little bit. But for now, this seems like a good place. And so I think that also means, just by nature of our conversation, that Oracle of Seasons and Oracle of Ages are in deep cuts.
Can we talk just about these games a little bit? Because I've not finished either, but I've played a good deal of both, maybe like halfway through both of them. They are like sort of ambitious Link's Awakening clones. And I always find their ambition to like sort of be outstripped by the limitations of the Game Boy, where like, I don't know, it feels like it's using a tool set that is not enough to realize the sort of scope of the traveling, you know, through time hundreds of years, or changing the seasons, and like altering the world around you. It just never seems like the game system itself can hold up under the weight of those concepts.
Yeah, I agree with you. It feels like the games are so ambitious, and it feels like there's so much in them.
Yeah,
I wish I could see these games. I'm the same as you. I don't think I've ever beat these games before, but I have given it an honest try multiple times, and I know I've made my way through a significant portion of. I know we played Oracle of Seasons for Connor McCabe's Zelda,
the super NPC
Zelda
Games
Game Club.
Yeah.
And
and if you recall, I started playing Oracle of Ages, got halfway through that, and then was like, oh no,
yeah.
I'm supposed to be playing the other one.
And so I know that these games are loved by a lot of people, and that for some people that these are their favorite Zelda games. And I wish I could see the games through, like, experience the games through the eyes of those people. Because I always find that I just get caught up in, or kind of like bogged down in the minutiae of the game. I think that there is so much ambition to it, and academically so much to like. I love the animal companions, you know, like
Moochie.
All of that stuff is
right,
really
that's
fun.
That's the name of the bear?
I think
Moochie
so.
Or Mochi or something like that, yeah.
But I think
he's a big fat blue bear with little wings. He flies around.
But it's almost like there's just too much going on. None of the systems work that well for me, and it just feels like there's a lot of cruft that you have to get through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like a lot of like tedious backtracking or side quests that like,
yes,
like are quote unquote quirky fun, but in reality I just find them
just
to be
aren't.
Tedious.
Yeah, I mean there's for me the big difference with the Oracle games, and to a lesser extent Minish Cap, is that I just feel the lack of Nintendo, right? Like there is the like secret ingredient of every Nintendo game, every good Nintendo game, is that it's just designed very well. That like there are these invisible strings that pull you in different directions, and you pick up on these cues, and like a Nintendo open world is just inherently more interesting than a non-Nintendo open world because they've thought about these things in abstract ways that we can't even quantify or express. And it's just a more robust world that I don't think Capcom has the same sort of handle on.
Yeah. So all of this is to say is that I think Oracle of Seasons and Oracle of Ages are fair deep cuts.
Yeah.
And also, again, available on the Nintendo Switch Online, but fairly recently. But I also just think as far as, you know, sitting somebody down who maybe has never played a Game Boy Color game before,
right,
that it's a hard ask.
Yeah, I agree. And in a harder ask than Link's Awakening, even in its Game Boy Color iteration. Which then leads us to the twin questions of A Link Between Worlds and the Minish Cap. Now, I want to start by saying here that I love A Link Between Worlds. I think it is an excellent game. I think it is hard to recommend it to not a hardcore Zelda fan.
Why is that? I'm curious.
Well, so it requires, I don't know if it requires, it benefits greatly from a familiarity with A Link to the Past. And even more so, like, a bone-deep familiarity with Link to the Past, where you can walk into a room or a forest or a house and have an innate understanding of what this looked like 20 years before. And the way that it blows up that concept with its item rental and the ability to approach dungeons in not whatever order you want, but you have quite a bit more freedom to approach things in different orders. It feels to me, and again, I love the game, but this is the first time where I'm really like, where my love of the game grinds against my instinct of like who to recommend this game to.
Yeah.
I feel like it's a deep cut.
So
let me know what you're thinking about that.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's I have to fight against my built-in instinct for this show, which is to immediately compare it to Oracle of Seasons and Oracle of Ages,
right,
and say, well, I like it better. But that's not the exercise.
That is
it's
not the
not
exercise.
A question,
right,
of how necessarily how like good the game is. So A Link Between Worlds is a really good game.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think you're right that it benefits from not just, I think part of the reason that people, longtime Zelda players were like, ah, yes, A Link Between Worlds, is because with the item stuff,
yeah,
it broke the convention that everybody was so anxious for, like the Zelda formula where you get,
right,
an item
and
in linear order, you know,
yes,
and that I,
and that's before Breath of the Wild does it.
Right, right. It's almost like a baby step into,
yes,
Breath of the Wild. Honestly, in hindsight, I think the item system kind of sucks.
Okay.
I don't think it's that fun. Like, I don't think it really adds anything to the game. I think it's kind of silly that you can rent or buy them. It, like,
sort of seems like you should just be able to walk in there and grab whatever one
you
want.
Or, like, why the, who, I don't understand who, like, renting items is for. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I hear what you're saying.
But I think that doesn't make the game bad. I think the low rule stuff, like the story stuff, is so good.
I agree with that.
But I think in order to appreciate it,
yes,
you have to play the other games. And then when the formula is broken, you're like, ah, they're breaking the formula.
Yes, which is why I think it has to be a deep cut. It is also a beneficiary of its time, right? Because when Link Between Worlds came out, the time since the last 2D Zelda that wasn't one of the DS games was a super long time, right? So people were ready to dig back into that old formula and then to have it, like, projecting in the same visual style as A Link to the Past. Like, that's a moment in time. And beyond that, this is a game you can only play on the 3DS, so it
right,
is, like, also kind of inaccessible at this point. So, like, I love it. I think it is one of the, if we were doing, like, a Zelda game ranking, which we haven't done in, like, 4 years. Or no, did we recently?
We did one after Skyward Sword.
We did one after Skyward Sword.
Yeah. Skyward Sword HD.
And Link Between Worlds, you know, comes out pretty high for us. Like, top five, probably. Although now that Tears of the Kingdom is in there, who knows? We'll have to do it again. But I think Link Between Worlds is a deep cut.
I think you're right. I think you're right. I think, let's kind of finish off this family tree talking about Minish Cap. Because
yeah,
we had addressed it a little bit, but never assigned it a ranking. To me, it's kind of a gimme that it would be in deep cuts,
okay,
along with Oracle Seasons and Oracle of Ages, but I'm interested in your thoughts.
My thoughts are kind of that it's a next step. It's not a game that I have a lot of personal affinity for, but it does improve on the like Game Boy Zelda formula because it's able to use those other buttons. So, you know, we're not slaves to the, you know, swapping out something else for your sword.
Well, it would have one. Oh, I guess it has R and L too.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's got another set of buttons there. And it just has enough like character, and I don't know. My gut is that it goes in next steps, but you seem to have a pretty strong inclination towards Deep Cut.
I will trust your gut. You have played more of this game than I have, to this point on the record of the show.
Right.
And so, you know, and who knows, maybe we'll have to do this again after we have completed our playthrough for NCS Arcade. But yeah, I trust your gut.
Okay. Let's, and you know, all these things are subject to being moved around as we go here, right?
Yeah, totally.
Now, we have a handful of we've got the classics on here, right? Zelda and Zelda 2. And then the 2DS games are also on here, and that would sort of finish up the 2D section, right?
Yeah. Yep.
But I don't know. Are we ready to tackle those yet, or are those things that we have to get to later?
The 2D games?
Yeah.
Yeah. I say we knock them out. Okay. And maybe this is, I don't know what your feelings are, but to me, Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link is no question to me a deep cut.
That's a deep cut. Yeah.
And I would put The Legend of Zelda in there. I think The Legend of Zelda at this point is a deep cut. Is it incredibly influential?
Yes.
Granted.
Yeah.
Is it accessible and fun to play nowadays? I would argue no. It's not really. It's not worth playing, mm-hmm. but I don't think it's a great example of The Legend of Zelda series, and I would be it would be hard for me to recommend that over somebody playing a Link to the Past or even the Minish Cap or Link's Awakening.
Yeah, or like any of the 3D Zelda games that we have on here. Yeah, that's tough because the influential nature of it and its like aggressively open world, like, you know, that like you genuinely are in a way that they don't really replicate again until Breath of the Wild. They do just kind of like dump you in the world. You can miss the sword, and in that way it can become a wholly inaccessible game by 2023 standards, which we're still in for another like 2 weeks, so you know we don't have to go by 2024 standards just yet, Mark.
Yeah, I guess I feel like that is almost the definition,
yeah,
of deep cut, where it's like, oh, this is good, but you're going to have to really like Zelda to appreciate this.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to have to be in deep before I introduce you to this track.
Right. You're going to really...
Using that music metaphor.
Yes. Like, you're going to want to know where all of this came from, right? Like, because that is sort of the analogy here, right? Is like, only when you have become interested in Zelda on an academic level can I introduce the original Legend of Zelda to you.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. I mean... Yes, for me, the original Legend of Zelda is a game that I would recommend to people who are deeply interested in Zelda and have never played it before.
Yeah.
I don't find joy in playing The Legend of Zelda.
Well, that's an insane thing to say, but I will agree, and I'm putting it over there on deep cuts. Which leads us now to the DS games, Phantom Hourglass and Spirit Tracks.
So these are hard because in the
they're
sense
so
that they different and also difficult to play nowadays.
Yeah.
You
yeah,
know,
very difficult.
I am holding out hope that someday they'll get like either the Skyward Sword treatment or we find some way to bring these games to Nintendo Switch Online because
or they just bring them to phones.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
let
they're
us play them on the phones.
They are,
I don't
they
know
are,
why we can't play it on a phone.
They're worth experiencing. I previously have said that I don't care for Spirit Tracks that much. Would love the opportunity to replay it and, you know, see if my opinion on it has changed. I haven't played it since it came out. But I would put...
Do I have to play that music track
again? The music is good.
Always bring up that music track.
I personally...
Yeah.
I think I would put, kind of for the same reason that, like, Link's Awakening, it's too bad that Phantom Hourglass and Spirit Tracks are seemingly evolutionary dead ends.
Yeah. Yes.
Where it's like, 100%. You know, we didn't get a 3DS game in this style, where you're controlling Link entirely with a stylus and all that kind of stuff. But I, so for me, I like Phantom Hourglass a lot. I think it's a fun game. I would put Phantom Hourglass, almost for the same reason we have Link's Awakening in here, in Next Steps. I don't think it's essential. And then I would put Spirit Tracks into Deep Cuts.
Yeah, I mean, if for no other reason than that, like, it is sort of the dead end of dead ends, right? Like, Phantom Hourglass is an extension of the Wind Waker formula that then Spirit Tracks, like, takes and then twists, like, past the point of recognition where, like, you're doing that same thing but on a train instead of, like, you lose the sea.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people prefer Spirit Tracks to Phantom Hourglass, so... If in your mind, if that is true for you, you could swap these two.
No, this is definitive. You can't swap these.
But yeah, I think Phantom Hourglass is an interesting next step.
Yes, I will agree. And again, like this would be something that you would recommend after someone has already gotten through the games that you consider to be essential.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so far, the only thing we have in that essential pile right now is A Link to the Past,
which I think is. Fair. Like, I think it's true. But
we've got all
we
the
have
3D
the 3D games,
games yeah.
to grapple with.
Which, like, I gotta say, looking at them is an impressive pile of games.
Look, Zelda games?
Good.
Pretty good.
Pretty good.
Yeah. Strong record.
I mean, honestly, I'm looking at the Deep Cuts, and there's, like, two of my favorite games ever made in there, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just the way of it. Where would you like to go next?
Let's start with the one. Okay, my let's start with the one, maybe two. I have my eye on two here that I'm like, these are for sure essentials. I have my eye on two that I think would be next steps, and I have one that I think would be deep cuts.
I honestly have who do you think is the deep cut in here? Is it Skyward Sword?
No, actually, I was going to say Majora's Mask, I think, is the deep cut. But maybe, now that I'm having to articulate this, maybe Majora's Mask would be a next step.
I feel like it's a next step, and Ocarina is
essential. I definitely agree with that. I think Ocarina is essential.
Let's talk about Ocarina of Time for a little bit. Something we've never done on this podcast before. In preparation for this recording, I opened up my Switch and went to the Nintendo 64, Nintendo Switch Online, I had started a playthrough of Ocarina a couple months ago and, like, put it down like halfway through the Young Link section, and I picked it back up, and I know that I'm letting a lot of nostalgia drive my drive me through it. And that I'm doing a lot of things in that game on instinct. But, like, there are some parts of that even for their small stature, even for their muddy textures, still feel good and still feel epic. The first time you walk into Hyrule Field, walking into Kakariko Village, climbing Death Mountain, like, all these things that are ultimately, like, very small, because this is all that the Nintendo 64 could reasonably be expected to kick out, still feels good. And there's, like, the charming building blocks of 3D Zelda, of Gorons, of the Zora. It's all here. All of these things that, like, you love in the Switch games are, and that's not to paint it as, like, an educational thing, but, like, in some ways, it is so illustrative of, like, where these things came from.
You know, it's hard for me to remember. Like, at this point, it's hard for me to separate the Nintendo 64 version from the 3DS remake.
Yeah.
Because, and so it sounds like you were playing the 64 version.
Yes.
So keep me honest. But one of the strengths, like, surprising strengths, I think, of Ocarina of Time is that mechanically it still holds up for being a Nintendo 64 game. Like,
yeah,
you know,
I think
like,
the only thing you miss is like free camera control, which can be sort of tough, but like the ability to just hit Z and have the camera slam behind your back is so useful as to almost like negate it. And then the lock on like revolutionized combat and is sort of like what we assume all games do now.
Yeah. I mean, what more need be said about Ocarina of Time as one of the best video games of all time? And still crazy to think that this was the fifth Zelda
game series, yeah.
ever. Fourth console Zelda game. But, and again, the template for the next, you know, 10 years
of
Zelda games. And, but, or 20 years. Like,
yeah.
20 years of Zelda games.
And, like, we've talked about how effectively this game explores its themes, right? In its themes of, like, growing older and what you lose as you are no longer a child, just, like, the ravages of time. Which is sort of like a universal theme after you hit like 13, that like it is one of the more effective storytelling Zelda games. And every other Zelda game aspires to be this concise with its storytelling.
Yeah. I think it's easier to recommend because of the 3DS remake, which
I will 100% agree.
At this point is also like a decade old.
Yep.
And so, but just as far as, like, accessibility, not just literally am I able to play this, but which actually now is probably harder than the Nintendo 64 game because that's on Nintendo Switch Online.
Right.
But
well, if you have the expansion pass.
If you have the expansion pack. But
pack, yes, thank
or
you.
Or pass. I honestly can't
it's
remember.
Booster Course Pass.
Expansion pack.
Yeah.
But yes, I think inarguably Ocarina of Time is an essential Zelda game. One thing we haven't talked about for this exercise, and I don't know that it's worth doing, but it has made me realize, like, within categories, should we be ordering these in, like, the order we think you should experience them?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think you just kind of want to be like, here are the essential games that you have to play after this, and it's a pile,
uh-huh.
right? You come in with your arms heaping full of games, and you just put it out on the table. And you leave it up to that person to, I mean, do you have like a prescriptive order that you would?
No, not necessarily. Okay. I was just, because some of them I think are maybe deeper cuts than others. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
But you're right. All in the eye of the beholder.
Yeah.
But let's figure out what to do with Majora's Mask. Because I think by putting this in Essentials, you're leaning
by
towards.
By putting Ocarina in Essentials.
In Ocarina in Essentials, you're leaning towards putting this in Next Steps. And I could be convinced of that, but in the same way that, like, Link's Awakening is the next step. But it feels like a deep cut to me.
So it kind of feels like a deep cut to me, too. No shade to Majora's Mask, because it is doing something experimental and interesting. And, you know, for all of my praise as recently as 3 minutes ago of the story and themes of Ocarina of Time, Majora's Mask is attempting more and doing more. Maybe in a little bit, like, lumpier way, but, like, is very good at it.
Plus, Stone Cold Bummer.
That's true. A Stone Cold Bummer. So what are you going to do?
But I feel like Majora's Mask, for the same reason that we put A Link Between Worlds in deep cuts, or for similar reasons,
yeah.
is why I would put Majora's Mask in there. I think Majora's Mask is more funny being the sixth Zelda game ever, but I kind of think it's more enjoyable once you have more familiarity with Zelda games.
That's
because
true.
Because then
it's,
you can appreciate
yes.
it, how different it is.
Yeah. Yep. No, I mean, I think that's absolutely true. It's like, how you can't listen to an Electric Dylan album before, you know what I mean? Like, where the thing that it's breaking, you need to have established in your veins first.
I think I just know where you're going. I'm about to say maybe.
I don't know a lot about Bob Dylan.
I was going
to
say,
so I don't know why I went down that
the
road.
The most controversial thing I'm about to say on this episode.
Who cares about Bob Dylan?
Yeah.
Great question. No, because do you want to know what my actual, like, first, my instinct was to say, like, it's like how you can't really recommend the Smashing Pumpkins a door to someone first, even though that's a cool record and I like it, but like it's a mellow kind of electronic thing from a band that is known for like hard rocking at like with jazz drums and like all this kind of stuff. It doesn't work without knowing what they were and what they would become after.
Yeah, I don't really know the Smashing Pumpkins that well either, but I believe
it's a much
you.
Better metaphor I believe than you. Me not understanding Bob Dylan's career.
So I think Majora's Mask, read on its quality in any way.
Yes.
But a deep cut in the Legend of Zelda franchise.
Which, again, that means it is in the same company as the original Legend of Zelda and A Link Between Worlds.
Yeah, I mean, seemingly, like, the bulk of games are going to end up being deep cuts, which I think is right.
Yeah, I mean, I think the other three are going to be all in Essentials or Next Steps.
I think so, too. But let's talk about them individually. So we, of course, have The Wind Waker, Twilight Princess, and then Skyward Sword.
Yeah. Can we agree that Wind Waker is an essential game in the Zelda franchise? Were you thinking that it goes in Next Steps?
This is one that I was really... I'm torn on all three.
Yeah, okay.
In that I could see the argument for all of them being greatest hits. Sorry, I interrupted myself because I zoomed in on Skyward Sword. It's like, can I make that argument? I like Skyward Sword a lot.
Not greatest hits, but Essentials.
Oh, Essentials, yeah. Like, I liked Skyward Sword a lot, but maybe I am bumping up against that being an Essential. But I could see an argument for The Wind Waker and Twilight Princess both being... I think you could make an argument that either one is Essentials. If we are saying that one goes in,
I think they both go. This is my gut, is that Wind Waker and Twilight Princess are both essential Zelda games.
I think you're right. The only reason that I would say that Twilight Princess maybe could be a next step
is because it feels iterative of Ocarina.
It is in some ways very similar to Ocarina of Time, and it doesn't feel as, if I was, if I'm looking at the entire Zelda experience.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you love Zelda, you've got to play blank. I don't know that I finished that sentence with Twilight Princess.
Oh, Twilight Princess is so good, Mark. I think about the experience of the Wii launching with it, right? And the Wii, kind of teetered on this, point of being video game novelty, right? Of being, a thing that was cool because you were shaking your hands around and playing with grandma and, all this stuff that, the Wii was genuinely great at, and I don't mean to sound like I'm shortchanging it, but, that it was presenting a different gaming experience. And then Twilight Princess comes along in that... in that primordial goo, and is like, no, I'm still Zelda, right? I'm still a hardcore video game, for whatever that means, and tells an interesting story with bizarre characters. It kind of does both the Majora's Mask thing and the Ocarina of Time thing at the same time, while also presenting these even stranger things, the ghost of the hero that teaches you the sword techniques.
The hero from Ocarina of Time.
The hero from Ocarina of Time. It is, of course, derivative of Ocarina of Time, but it's almost the culmination of what Ocarina of Time was attempting.
The more you're talking about it, the more I remember how cool Twilight Princess is. I also think, having not played the...
It has Midna.
Midna, it has Wolf Link is pretty sick. You're riding opponent doing combat for the first time.
Yep. Even if that the first mission they make you do with it is bad. And it is. There's no if about it.
But this is another one, having not played the HD version, but just from reputation, that is easier to recommend because the HD version exists.
Yeah.
And a lot of, the quality of life improvements in that game make it easier to play, more approachable, not as frustrating in some of those more annoying areas. Yeah, Twilight Princess. Zant is a really cool villain.
Yeah.
The design is really sick. Yeah, I mean.
We were talking, oh God, this is now over a month ago at this point, but about how Nintendo has, in my mind, started really being good at endings, right? That they know how to take the things that you have done in the many hours leading up to the end of a game and like spitting it back out to you and being like, now you are a master of that. Do that again. And the ending of Twilight Princess very specifically recalls a dumb goat throwing mini game from the beginning of the game that like it does a full circle moment that in the crux of this boss fight that makes it, even if you're not consciously registering it, connects you to the first time you picked up the controller to play it. It's really good game.
It also just has amazing dungeons.
Yes.
Some of the best dungeons
some
in the game.
Some of the best, yes.
Yeah, all right, okay, cool. We talked, I'm hyped on Twilight Princess. Want to play the game again. And yeah, I think it makes sense as a essential entry in the Legend of Zelda series.
I will say, the fact that it is not accessible in any real way right now is a rough look, and is one of, I think, the great crimes of the Switch.
Yeah, whether it happens on the Switch or the next Switch hardware or whatever, the fact that there are HD versions just out there waiting to be ported, I feel confident it's going to happen someday.
Right.
But
we've been saying that for 3 years, right?
It's just got to happen.
It does happen.
Speaking of an HD version just hanging out there, this is another one where, with Twilight Princess in there, I could see the argument for putting Wind Waker in next steps, and not necessarily an essential Zelda game. But it has its own, in the way that, like, Link to the Past is the trunk of a family tree.
Yes.
The Wind Waker one is unfortunate. Well, I was going to say unfortunately, short. But I don't know that that's true. It's just spun off in spinoffs. So, Four Swords Adventure and even Triforce Heroes, they all kind of have that Toon Link aesthetic that was established in the Wind Waker.
Even though I'd say Triforce Heroes is more directly doing what Link Between Worlds did, but
yeah,
like,
that's true.
Link Between Worlds is sort of borrowing both from A Link to the Past and Wind Waker.
Do you remember
this is all a rich stew.
Do you remember how hated the Link Between Worlds art style was when it was first revealed?
I that is a criticism for which I have no time. I think it's amazing how much it looks like A Link to the Past.
I when it first came out, I was kind of like, yeah, but it's not great. But once it matters so little to the enjoyment of the game, whether you think it looks fine or whether you think it looks gross, like it in the end, it really did not matter.
Sure,
the game is amazing.
And we put it in deep cuts.
And we put it in deep cuts. Not a judgment on its quality.
Talk to me about Wind Waker though. Like, just let's just like drill into what we like about this experience, what's frustrating about the experience, and how much Zelda-y, how much it is what Zelda is, you know?
Yeah. I think the reason why I would put it right now into next steps is because it feels apart from the rest of the games that are in Essentials. Like, it feels like an experiment, not in the way that like Majora's Mask was, or Spirit Tracks or something. It feels like an experiment pushing beyond the, man, maybe I'm talking myself into making it essentials.
This is what I'm saying.
Yeah,
is that like, because part of its experimentation, and again, this is, you know, we talked about like some of the ambitions of these games running up against what the hardware and software is physically capable of. Whereas I think the Wind Waker uses the limits of the GameCube to make a better game. Like, the Great Sea, this like largely featureless ocean that becomes this like ultimate frontier. I don't know. The endlessness of this ocean. And I know it has borders and it'll turn you around if you go too far. But it sure feels big. And it's such an effective illusion that, I don't know, it feels like the big open high rules of Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom to me.
Yeah, I feel like that's interesting that you're touting that as like a highlight of the game. I would say that it is something that they improved on in the HD version.
Where you can go faster.
Like, and you know, and hey, that's fair. We have bumped up some of these because the HD versions exist.
Well, and I don't think that the ability to move faster through the sea makes the sea feel any less big.
So when you're
just
saying,
less inconvenient.
I do think, because you were saying, you know, like kind of the limitations of the GameCube will make the game great. I feel like the one area that I would agree that is true in, for sure, unquestionably, is the art style.
Yeah.
Where, you know, instead of, I mean, we saw what trying to do hyper-realistic, or I don't know if hyper-realistic is the right term, because nothing in Twilight Princess is realistic looking at all. But, you know, more like grounded designs. And even that just feels wrong when you're talking about Twilight Princess, because everything in that world looks crazy.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely insane.
Right. But in a way that both disgusts and intrigues me.
But I do think that, what you know, part of the reason that they went with the approach they did with Wind Waker is because you can make it look really good on GameCube.
Yeah.
And it did. And
it looks really good, but it looks even better in motion, right? Like, and, like, it sounds right, too. They started doing this thing of when Link is attacking that there are musical stings that go along with each like hit of the sword, and they get like higher and a little more urgent every time you hit an enemy. So like, I don't know, the presentation of Wind Waker is remarkable, and not just for its art style.
Here's what I want us to be able to answer, and I'm not saying that Wind Waker shouldn't be essential, but what I want us to answer is how we would finish this idea.
Yeah.
Is, hey, you just played Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom. The next Zelda game you should play is Wind Waker.
Because
for this reason.
Right.
And I don't, like, I have an argument for Link to the Past. I have an argument for Ocarina of Time, an argument for Twilight Princess. I don't really have one for Wind Waker, even though it's a great game.
I guess this does raise the question of, like, is it something where you need to have experience in, have a greater experience and appreciation of like the open field of Hyrule before you can explore a world without it? You know what I mean?
Okay. Yeah, I think that's a fair question. I think for me, it's more like if you never played the Wind Waker,
yeah,
could you say that you have played like the essential Zelda games?
If you've never played the Wind Waker, then you have not seen the origin of the
Toon Link,
of Toon Link, of the Rito, the bird people they're introduced in this game. The what are they called? The Koroks. We meet them in Wind Waker.
So maybe that's the argument for making it essential. It's like all these things that you experienced in Tears of the Kingdom and Breath of the Wild, the origin of many of those ideas.
Right, in the same way that Ocarina of Time has those same things with like the Goron and the Zora, the other half of like that equation is present in the Wind Waker.
Yeah. All right. I buy that.
Although now that like we're thinking about it and talking about it, like there's the whole like Zelda's a pirate and like, you know, all these like the Forbidden Fortress and all this kind of stuff. And the fact that there are only, once you do like the first three dungeons, that there are only like two after that because like they ran out of time or ran out of space or whatever. And they're both these like escort mission levels, which like that doesn't really come back in Zelda games a lot.
But I think that's okay, because I think these are all good points, right? Like the game is famously kind of truncated. And the latter missions kind of stink because they had to just wrap it up quickly. But so it doesn't feel fully fleshed out. So I think those are all good points, and maybe it does end up in... I love that Wind Waker is... It may, of course, Wind Waker is,
of course,
is
yes.
the most difficult one to...
I like that it is not only split us a bit against each other, but also against ourselves.
Yes, multiple times
now. We have both
flip-flopped both positions multiple times. But I think all of that is true, and maybe that is the reason to keep it out of essentials. But I don't think that it being different...
Yeah.
is the reason to keep it out of essentials. I think something can be essential and still break the format.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
You know, like
okay.
I don't think everything has to be Ocarina of Time in order for it to be essential
right.
to the Zelda series.
Well, and we do right now the essential category is like Zelda formula, Zelda formula, Zelda formula.
Well,
right?
That's because all of these games are going, you know, like all
yes.
these games are the Zelda formula huh? that we're talking about, essentially. but I see your point. Especially,
yeah.
I feel like these three, A Link to the Past, Ocarina of Time, especially Ocarina of Time and Twilight Princess,
yeah.
are very much reflections of each other.
Yeah.
I think we put Wind Waker in essentials.
There it goes. Wind Waker is going in the essentials.
And we feel good about it.
And we feel so good about it.
So final game that we have yet to classify is
yes.
Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword.
Right.
A game that I didn't play on Wii, but when it was released on the HD version on Switch, I played it, and I ended up loving this game. And I don't know if it was because, you know, Breath of the Wild had come out, and so it had been many years since I had played a new, to me,
mm-hmm.
Classic Zelda formula game. So I played, and I was like, you know what? These things still work.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
you know what? It's a good formula.
Plus, the story is great.
Story's great.
The characters are really good. Mm-hmm. It does a lot of things right. It is imperfect enough that there's no way it could go into essentials.
But I don't think there's a world where it's a deep cut. Like, I think it is a better game than that. And again, there are great games in the deep cut category. But it feels enough like a Zelda game that it feels like a next step to me. Like, if you enjoyed these games, here is a fun twist on it that is not so esoteric as to be considered a deep cut, but is also, like, does make you swing your arms around in order to play it. You know what I mean?
And I also think because of... I think it's the perfect... You liked Wind Waker, you're going to like Skyward Sword. Because you kind of... You liked the things that were different about it. Like, you liked being out
yeah.
on the boat. You liked the different art style. Like, you liked all those things.
I think this is
well,
right.
Let me introduce you to Skyward Sword, because there's some weird things about it. You're limited to these very specific areas. It's not like a connected world or anything like that.
Yeah.
You're always returning to the hub and then skydiving to one of, like, four areas. But, and so it's like, yeah, if you liked Wind Waker, I think you'll jive with the weirdness of Skyward Sword.
Skyward Sword also does the, like, kind of beautiful thing of doing variations on the established, like, canon of these games, where it's like, yeah, you'll go to Death Mountain, and, like, there are Gorons around somewhere, but mostly you're going to be dealing with these weird mole guys.
That's right.
You know? Or, like, yeah, we got Zoras, but they're kind of like seahorses. You know what I mean? Like,
and we got these, like, Kikwik guys.
Yes, that's right. That's right. They're not really Koroks, but, like, they kind of are, but maybe they're also birds. So, like, everything, there's, like, it does feel like you need to have the basis of these other essentials before moving on to it. I just want to make sure that we have a like cohesive enough argument to not put it in deep cuts. And it can't just be because we played it recently and liked it.
Right.
How
right.
is Skyward Sword? Mark, how is Skyward Sword not a deep cut?
So I do think it has the benefit of time in that it is one of the more recent games.
Sure.
And is
imminently accessible on
yes,
a Switch.
Very accessible. I also think that it has the benefit of, you know, like a lot of the things that were learned from Twilight Princess and Wind Waker. I think that it is enough of a twist on the Zelda formula. Like, it's the introduction of the stamina wheel that
totally.
Would become a huge mm-hmm. part of the Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom style gameplay. I think it has the possibly the strongest, like, Zelda and Link connection and characterizations and, like, story. Yeah.
And absolutely. And Tears of the Kingdom owes a debt, a story debt to Skyward Sword for that, right?
And I would almost say that the story, for me, like, the story and the events and all of the stuff with Impa and
Groose,
you know, like, Groose and all of that, like, elevate it above a deep cut. Like, I think people who like Zelda should experience all of that because it is a version of those characters that are so friendly with each other in a world that is very, like, approachable, that to me, that's what elevates it above deep cut. Mm-hmm. Is that I want more people to experience those aspects of what a Zelda game could be.
But not everyone. It's not
it's not essential.
It would be, I feel like it would be hard to, like, we don't, all of the essential games here that we have listed are neither motion or touch controlled.
Yeah, I mean
Twilight Princess has some, but, like, I mean, yeah. Come on.
but I mean, I really think, like, again, if we are looking at this through the lens of, oh, you like Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom,
yeah,
I think you will like these. It's easy to make an argument, except for, I know we put Wind Waker in here, but it's easy for me to make an argument for all of, right? You're saying, like, A Link to the Past?
Yeah.
Ocarina of Time, Twilight Princess? Yeah, that, like, Wind Waker, that all follows for me. And then the next steps would be, you know, these other games.
Yeah.
So, I do. Do we want to run through them?
Let's run through them. Should we start at the deep cuts and then work our way back up to...
Yes, but okay. Let's remember through the filter of, like, oh, you're like, oh, you're nasty. You like Link's Awakening? All right, then let me introduce you to, like, this thing.
Right. So in the deep cuts, we've got Majora's Mask.
The Original Legend of Zelda.
Spirit Tracks.
Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link.
A Link Between Worlds.
Oracle of Seasons.
And Oracle of Ages. Those belong in our deep cuts. People who have expressed continued, renewed interest in the Legend of Zelda series.
It
makes sense to me. Okay, now in our next steps, so these would be for people who have played the series, explored a little more. We've got Skyward Sword.
The Minish Cap.
Link's Awakening.
And Phantom Hourglass.
You still feel good about Phantom Hourglass being...
I feel good about Phantom Hourglass, yeah.
All right, great. And then in our Essentials category, we go The Wind Waker.
Twilight Princess.
Ocarina of Time.
And A Link to the Past.
Which makes a lot of sense to me. And then the greatest hits, of course, being Tears of the Kingdom and Breath of the Wild. Mark, any other takeaways from doing this? Is there anything that surprised you in this process? Obviously, this felt hard.
It did feel hard. It was... One, you realize what a like how many riches there are in the Zelda universe,
right?
But two, I think this was a like it was interesting to kind of like push ourselves in this way.
Yeah. I will agree with that. It's also it like interesting how much you can not wholly divorce quality of game from where it goes in these categories, which, like, you know, makes sense. Some of my, like, for my favorite bands, some of their songs that are my favorites are the deep cuts.
Yeah, right? Like all those Electric Dylan songs we love so much.
All right, I called myself out on that one after you called me out. Okay, all right, Mark, let's close this out. All right, that is going to do it for this episode of Nintendo Cartridge Society. Remember, you should get into our Discord if you are not already. Email us at nintendocartridgesociety@gmail.com. Anthony DeLuca made our logo. Our theme music is provided by 8-Bit Betty. You can get more of his music by going to 8bitbetty.com or by listening right now. For my co-host, Mark Mitchell, this is Patrick Ellers saying thank you for listening.